I'm Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. Charge, formerly Zero Carbon Charge, is building a network of off-grid EV charging stations across South Africa. But with EV sales in their infancy, electricity supply getting more and more expensive, and policy trailing, the question is, are they a little too early to market? Here to answer that and many other questions is Yube Ru. He is a co-founder and director at Charge. Yube, hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much and thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Yube, if we could start by talking about the company's origin and the vision behind Charge. Why did you move from Zero Carbon Charge, the name, to Charge?
Well, it was a little bit of an evolution. I had a business card that said only Charge, so everybody started calling it Charge. So it's more, it was more a decision that made itself than a conscious decision. Mm. But you know, you can't register the word Charge, and patent it or trademark it. So our logo has always been a little car with Charge, and we just dropped the rest. And through our media efforts and our marketing, the idea was to own Charge in South Africa and Africa. And I think to a certain extent, we've been lucky to succeed in that.
Yes. But that prefix, that zero carbon prefix, is actually at the core of your business philosophy. Why zero carbon charging?
Well, I think the migration to electric vehicles is the sort of technology change that only comes around once in a generation. Happened with the internet, happened with smartphones. And when you look at the migration to electric vehicles, it's not a technology change in vehicles, it's an energy change. And it made absolutely no sense to me from a carbon impact point of view to move from an internal combustion vehicle to an electric vehicle, but then charge it with electricity produced from coal, because your carbon footprint is actually heavier in South Africa. Look at this South African grid. But more than that, it was necessitated in South Africa because our grid simply was never designed to accommodate the migration from petrol and diesel as a source of energy to electricity as a source of energy. The grid was always designed to operate very close to its peak capacity, its design capacity. So the cables going into Pofada was designed to serve 500 people and 5 sheep farmers. Mm. And now all of a sudden you've got 1,000 cars and 100 trucks going past, and now you want to charge. And all of a sudden you've got a 100 megawatt hour demand per day. Mm. So that's what really drove it. It was necessity. Mm. And we always thought that if we could act as a catalyst for the migration to electric vehicles, but more than that, for the migration to renewably powered electric vehicles, that would be an accomplishment. That's really at the core of the business.
All right. And we'll get back to grid capacity, because there are some efforts to actually build charging stations that are on the grid. And we'll talk more about those points later on. But your first station was built in Wolmaranstad in 2024. Can you tell us about that journey and how that is doing so far?
Well, the Wolmaranstad was really a proof of concept, technical proof of concept. That's why it's in Wolmaranstad. It was simply the first site that was fully permitted and we could construct it. Because what I didn't realize when I started the business was that this has never been attempted anywhere in the world to build a completely off-grid charging network. So we had to literally design the equipment from the ground up. Though it's all off-the-shelf equipment, stringing it together and getting it to work together seamlessly, and especially to work modularly so we can expand either the solar or the batteries or the charging infrastructures individually, modularly, as we get to understand consumer behavior better. So and what I also didn't realize is how technically complicated the software to run this whole business is going to be, because we run a power station, and then we have to talk to the vehicles, set off the chargers, manage the chargers, and then have a consumer interface, and talk to his back. So that was the third component. So when we had all of that in place, we decided, okay, let's build it. Let's get this animal into the wild, see whether it can survive. And touch wood, we've been operating for about 15 months. We went live late November last year, and we've had a 99.6% uptime on our chargers. And a similar uptime on our communications, and the software operated flawlessly. So touch wood, from a technical feasibility, that was a very good test. We learned a lot of lessons, but it actually for new tech, it's a testament to our electrical engineer Meli, and his counterparts in China that we could build such a novel solution, install it, and it functioned from word go.
So you've got the proof of concept going, and the plan is to build off-grid EV charging stations approximately every 150 kilometers on South Africa's national highways. Now, you've said before that there is a risk that the company is a little too early to market. Could you explore that question? Why do you think so?
Well, at the risk of sounding a little bit like a grave robber or an ambulance chaser, I think Donald Trump's forays into the Middle East changed that scenario radically over the last 2 months. There's been an explosion in the sale of especially plug-in hybrids in South Africa, but also in EV sales. There are no second-hand EVs to be had for love of money in South Africa. The demand for diesel-powered vehicles have just crashed, have just collapsed and been replaced by electric vehicles. And what we've always done with our network, we designed it to, as small as we could, to still give an EV driver the best possible experience, to charge any vehicle in the South African market at its maximum capacity. We managed to charge a Porsche Taycan at 240 kilowatts. So, but to build that as small as we could, and then have the flexibility to understand how are we going to expand once we can understand the consumer behavior, either add more batteries, if they charge in the middle of the day, add more solar, or add more dispensers. And that sort of flexibility was designed into the entire system. And by doing that, we managed to come up with a solution that breaks even on a cash basis with three vehicles and the average charge of 55 kilowatt hours and becomes profitable on a EBITDA basis at 9 vehicles a day.
Okay.
That gives you a relatively small car park. To give you an idea, if we achieve a total penetration in South Africa of 60,000 vehicles, the entire network is profitable.
Yes.
In our estimation. So it was designed to break even on a very, very, very low market penetration. And I think with the absolute explosion in demand for electric vehicles, I think we're going to reach that tipping point of 5% of new vehicle sales by next year. To give you an idea, BYD is selling more EVs of their single brand than the total EV sales in the market last year. So that exponential growth have kicked off. Yes. And in all markets in the world where the market penetration of EVs went to 5% of new vehicle sales, it accelerated to 15% of new vehicle sales within 3 years. And if that happens, it's we've reached a tipping point. So 5% is an absolute tipping point, and I expect to reach that next year in our market.
So you've spoken about geopolitical influences that are now driving the South African consumer towards electric vehicle. But do you think that our policy landscape is doing as much as it can to also spur that demand on?
Policy landscape, I don't think ever does what it can, but no. In South Africa, there's a lot of talk, a lot of promises to reach net zero in 2050, mm-hmm. especially in the transport sector. But astoundingly enough, that's not supported by government action. There's still the import of EVs is still taxed as a luxury good, tracks an ad valorem tax on top of the normal import duty. But I think when you look at electric vehicles, it's simply a better widget. It's better tech. Uh-huh. If you've driven an electric vehicle, you realize, but this is a different animal. You drive a passenger vehicle with the performance of a Porsche. For the first time in 120 years, you can produce your own energy by having a little bit of rooftop solar. And with a 2.5 kilowatt peak solar system on your roof, you can produce all the energy that you're going to use for your inner city driving forever. So I think it's a tipping point in how we view energy for mobility. It's a democratization and the localization of energy, because for the first time we've got it in our own control. And I think the mistake the government makes when they look at that energy transition is looking at it through the rearview mirror and trying to protect the incumbents, the local car manufacturing industry, and but they should do the cost-benefit analysis. Yes, the car industry employs 400,000 people. Yes, it's important.
Yes.
But can you hold it back if there's a new tech, or do you exploit the new tech? And the flip side is if we localize the energy production for our passenger and commercial fleets, it gives us, first of all, energy independence. It gives us security of energy. It gives us price security, of which we now all of a sudden very, very aware. And lastly, the every kilowatt hour of electricity we produce on site and sell on site is a kilowatt hour or is a little bit of energy that we don't have to import in the form of fossil fuels, either petrol or diesel.
Yes.
So the balance of payment impact is simply enormous. So I think the government should look at abolishing import duties for a defined period of 5 years to get the market up to a 25% of new vehicle sales, market penetration. Then we're going to have critical mass for manufacturers to assemble and build vehicles locally. And that's an elegant way of replacing the incumbent fossil fuel manufacturing basis. But the big impact is for every EV that you put in the market that's charged by renewable energy is a permanent forex saving on the government side. So that I think that's one part of the argument that people always miss. And I always say that charge is a pure energy business. All we do is we make electricity and we sell it to – we make electricity where it's required by the customer and we sell it to the end user. So there are no transmission losses. It is it's localization and it's national. It's like every site that we build at every town is like that 120 years of town. It's tantamount to that town drilling a hole and finding oil. Because they become a permanent part of that energy value chain, which is amazing.
Okay. So, but now speaking to building this network of off-grid power stations around the country, I understand you got some funding from the Development Bank of Southern Africa. What's the rollout plan with that?
We're currently constructing two sites on the N3. If the rain lets up a bit, we're 3 days away from the civil works completion. The last components, the battery system is on the ground in Durban. It'll be delivered on Monday, and both those sites will be live in mid-May. Mm-hmm. And that will unlock the N3 between Johannesburg and Durban. Mm-hmm. So that's a big step.
Yeah.
That's our commercial proof of concept. And astoundingly enough, we've signed a takeoff agreement with a commercial off-taker for 50% of the energy produced at those sites,
mm-hmm.
which will make them profitable from word go.
Yes.
And then we're going to build the N1 Cape Town to Messina,
mm-hmm.
and the N6 from Bloemfontein to East London. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to roll out first a network of 60 stations that'll cover the entire country, all the national roads at 300 kilometer intervals, and then we're going to densify that with another 60 sites to 150 kilometer intervals. And you know, then we'll have the data to know exactly where we have to add capacity and expand.
Yes.
But I expect, with the current uptick in EV and plug-in hybrid sales, that we will have to expand capacity on the N3 before the end of the year.
This is wonderful to hear, but your capital costs are high, as you have said. How are you planning to finance it going forward? One of the things that you've mentioned in the past is that you want to raise money publicly, but you're not going to the local bourse, the JSE. What's the route you're taking and why?
We in the process We did raise money from the DBSA. We got 100 million rand investment from the DBSA. Visionary investment. It's an unlocking fund that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been fabulous partners. And it was a very good exercise because everybody knows if you've passed the DBSA's due diligence, you've been through the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been fabulous partners. We've raised money privately. We're in the market at the moment. We're fairly close to securing a matching investment to the DBSA.
Mm.
We're doing a private raise through Mesh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously just for qualified investors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the intention is, I've always said, it makes no sense to localize the energy production, but then export the ownership of the business. So then we're going to do a public raise. Obviously, it's very rule-bound, so we still have to register and do all the groundwork for that. So we'll launch that later the year.
Okay.
But we're very close to having funds in the bank to finalize the N1, and then we'll raise as and when required. We're always in the market. We work with Mesh locally, and African Merchant Capital in London to do the raise. So you know, but it's almost like building a toll road. It's enormously capital intensive up front, but for every solar panel you put down, you've got an energy factory that's guaranteed for 35 years. So your margins are very healthy, and you've capped your cost. Because we vertically integrated, in other words, we basically take sunshine, add value to it, and sell it to the end consumer. It's a very, very robust business model, and it's a very attractive business model.
Mm.
And because it's in the energy space, it's the numbers are extraordinarily large.
Mm.
So you don't need a 50% market share to have a successful business. You need a 1% market share to have a 5 billion rand business.
Mm.
So from that point of view, it's that sort of early stage opportunity, mm-hmm. like the listing of MTN and Vodacom, and it's a network business. So it's one of those one-off opportunities that only comes around. I think we were ahead of the curve. It was very painful over the last 4.5 years of permitting the sites, signing the sites, getting the environmental approvals, but now we're ahead of the game and we can roll out literally as fast as we raise money.
All right. You mentioned that Mesh is one of your partners. That's a tokenization platform, yes, right? Crypto blockchain-based.
Yeah.
Why partner with a blockchain-based platform?
Well, they've got the tech.
Mm-hmm.
They're secure. They're transparent.
Mm.
They've done it. They've got the experience.
Mm.
And for early stage raising in South Africa, so they just provided a private trading platform.
Mm.
To list on the South African stock exchanges is onerous, very expensive, and it's not early stage development friendly. It's late stage friendly. It's when you can attract institutional investors and you've got a 3-year profit record.
Mm-hmm.
So and to a certain extent, those South Africans got an enormous capital pool.
Okay.
It's not early stage friendly. It's late stage friendly. So they'd rather go for lower returns at a later stage than fabulous returns at an early stage.
Mm.
And that's why we working with them. They've got proven tech. They're transparent. It gives a sense of security to a potential investor that it's well managed.
Mm. So now looking at the competitive landscape, you said you are a pioneer in terms of EV off-grid charging, right? But charging on the grid is something that's been done in other parts of the world, and BYD has announced locally that they're going to be building a 1-megawatt charging network. They have a partnership with Eskom. Is there not a risk on your side that, you know, when big players like this and others, international players, come in with big budgets, that they could overrun your plans?
You know, the permitting of the sites in South Africa is an onerous process,
uh-huh,
and it's a legal timeline.
Uh-huh.
You have to do this, and then you have to go through public participation for 90 days and comments, and
uh-huh,
and it's run by very thorough officials that don't fudge their
machine
timelines.
Yeah.
So there's a time constraint. Secondly, we welcome all the online charging,
mm,
because it makes it easy for migration to EV for EV drivers.
Mm.
There will always be place for both players in the market.
Uh-huh.
But on the long distance and in rural areas,
uh-huh,
your problem is the distribution network,
yes,
not just the availability of the energy or the amount of energy generated,
yes,
but is getting the energy where it's required. Uh-huh. And it's not due to anybody's fault.
Yes.
It's simply the grid was never designed to, uh-huh, deliver that amount of power at those points.
Uh-huh.
And it'll take years for the grid to pivot, uh-huh, to get there.
Yeah.
So we believe they're two markets, and the grid constraints aren't just confined to the rural areas.
Yeah.
The moment we go past 15% market penetration in urban areas,
yeah,
the urban grid runs into problems.
Yeah.
Because now all of a sudden you've got everybody going home at 5 o'clock, plugging their cars, and the grid collapse. So we're also looking at providing those solutions in a city that's also off grid.
Uh-huh.
Now those are more difficult. You have to. It's more complicated. It's more innovative. It's more normally a blended model.
Uh-huh.
But rurally, you know, the obvious thing would be to stick chargers at all filling stations.
Yes.
They've got access. They've got convenience. They've got everything there.
Uh-huh.
But we look at quite a few of those sites, and the maximum size charger we could put in was 60 kilowatts,
uh-huh,
and it's a single one. We've all been on the N1 north of Tshwane on a Friday afternoon or on a Sunday afternoon, and if you scale that to electric vehicles, the infrastructure required is, yeah, simply going to be enormous. And I find that that's one thing that people underestimate, especially when you get to commercial vehicles. Each commercial vehicle, each heavy commercial vehicle, consumes about the same amount of energy as 9 passenger vehicles. So I think people completely underestimate the scale of the energy required. You know, I drove to Gaborone's on Monday, coming back from it, and the amount of fuel trucks that I went past,
yes,
to provide the energy for cars and trucks in Botswana was just overwhelming. Mm. So now you imagine replacing that with electricity.
Yes.
And that's why I believe this localized production, and also from an economic point of view. Remember, you've now got no transmission losses.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to establish that infrastructure to get the power there. You produce it on-site and you sell it on-site. You store it on-site. And from an economic point of view, the levelized cost of energy is now cheaper to do it that way than to even at the current rates go on the Eskom grid.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is, once you're on Eskom, we just saw another 9% increase in Eskom tariffs.
Yes.
Inflation is 5%. So, and we've had above inflation increases from Eskom now for years. So you've once again got no control over your input costs. And that's what makes our model so novel, because we add value to sunshine. And that's why it's such a unique model. And not for all countries. Where you've got a dense population, you've got a huge grid, you've got lots of hydro, different story.
Okay.
But we don't live in a country. We live in an extended country.
Yes.
Relatively low populations, long distances.
Yes.
And 49% of fuel in South Africa is consumed outside the urban edges. So that's the market we going after initially, is yes, that 49% outside the urban edges.
All right. So you mentioned earlier on, you mentioned filling stations and you mentioned thorough regulators in this country. SANRAL recently proposed policy changes that would make them basically charge businesses that are within 60 meters, I think, or of national roads and 500 meters from an interchange to operate there. What's your take on this as an industry player?
You know, somebody's got to fund the roads.
Okay.
Up till now, it's been funded largely with a fuel levy. And there's a legitimate concern about funding the roads. So I've got no problem in principle that there need to be a funding model. It need to be transparent. You know, the one thing about taxes, I pay exactly the same taxes you do as she does, as everybody else does, and it's not a negotiation. That's what you pay. If you earn so much, you pay taxes. So what we have here is a funding mechanism for roads, but it's not transparent, it's not equally applied. Remember, that policy was proclaimed, and it's only because of the Castleman case that it now went through public participation. And it was just announced by a poor decision. And as it stands currently, it gives the SANRAL board the opportunity to increase those rates. And to give you an idea, the there was a dramatic increase in the percentages already in the new rates card. So in principle, there's not a problem. But where there is a problem, all of a sudden, SANRAL wants to participate in the businesses. So SANRAL is moving from a NERSA role, where they control all the access to the national roads, and it used to be a technical application to where they don't want to be put those out to tender. They want to decide where they need to go, what you're allowed to do there. And those are functions that belong in the private sector, not for a regulator. Mm. And the moment they start participating as an economic beneficiary from those decisions. Yeah. They no longer a regulator. All of a sudden, they now the rulemaker, the referee, and a player.
Uh-huh.
And that's simply wrong. And there's not oversight there. Uh-huh. Then they need to be regulated.
Yes.
So that was our objection, that they can't be a regulator and a player. Uh-huh. You know, we've now had, as part of a land use application, you need a letter of comment from SANRAL. If you're within 500 meters of an interchange or 60 meters. And that's always been the case. There's some of those comments that have been outstanding for 1,150 days.
Uh-huh.
And that's an abuse of that monopolistic power. And what they've done is they've tried to push out those comments so we could fall under the new rates card. And that already shows you that, you know, all of a sudden, are you the regulator or are you now a participant? And are you abusing that monopolistic power?
Yes.
And we convinced that they now fall under the Competitions Act, which creates a whole new set of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are a they hold the absolute monopoly of access to the national roads,
mm-hmm.
and we feel the national roads are assets to the nation. It's things that were established by every single South African, paid for by every liter of fuel that you consumed mm. historically, and it should be a developmental driver.
Mm.
And nowhere does centralized control in one person drive development. It stems development. And that's our basic objection, is the fact that they now want to be rulemaker, referee, and player. That's simply not good governance.
All right. You've given us a very clear vision for Charge's future in the country in terms of how you want to expand your network. But you also mentioned that South Africa is a sparse country, right, with dispersed populations. We're not the only country in the world that could be described in those words. Are there plans in future to expand to other markets or perhaps partner with others doing similar things in those markets?
You know, astoundingly, California, with a fairly large penetration of electric vehicles, has already run into grid constraints.
Mm.
So they've proved the case.
Mm.
I'm an Africa optimist. Mm. The population in Africa is going to double in the next 50 years. The moment you look at commercial vehicles, it's no longer a local business
mm.
because we're so interconnected with copper coming from Zambia, all the exports from South Africa, South African ports, all the way up to the DRC, Zambia. I was in Botswana on Monday to talk to them about a charging solution in Gaborones, but then also covering those main arteries, the Trans-Kalahari Highway,
mm-hmm.
the route up north. I estimate it's going to take around about 630 truck charging stations in Africa to electrify the main highways.
Mm.
That is an enormous task, but it's Charge to a large extent is a developmental organization, because each one of these stations we established, there's a locally owned convenience store,
uh-huh.
which becomes a shop window for that community. There's the energy, the landowner shares in 5% of the revenue generated. We establish a bursary fund of 1% of revenue. Bursaries earmarked at that area.
Uh-huh.
So to a certain extent, it's a developmental organization. Each one of those footprints across Africa.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine? In Africa, there's still 700 million people that haven't got access to basic electricity. I mean, it's a kid that gets home and he can't study at night because he hasn't got an electric lamp. I mean, it's unthinkable. So can you imagine what a developmental driver it is if you can anchor power stations good security and good communications with this network, and what developmental nodes those will come, and what difference it can make to the entire Africa, and how you can then expand that into a local electricity grid to cover that 700 million people that's going to double in the next 50 years. So I see it as an incredible developmental opportunity. And it, at its base, and it's at the core of our business, it's an energy business, electricity business. But it's a distributed, a cellular electricity business.
Yes.
And if from that, if you've got that insight, then you view the entire project differently, because it's almost a must do project for South Africa and for Africa.
Yes, especially in the African continent, where the many places where the grid doesn't exist at all.
I expect
that
exactly the same thing that happened with telephones.
Uh-huh.
Where Africa went from no fixed line network to iPhones and smartphones in one step and skip 80 years worth of grid development.
Mm.
I expect exactly the same thing, because the fundamentals in electricity generation have now changed. Solar panels have come down by a factor of 99.
Mm-hmm.
Batteries have come down by a factor of 99. So the fundamental economics have changed. From building a national grid, and that only started 140 years ago when Edison built the first grid in America, and Westinghouse alternating current won out over Edison, and they so that's a model that's only 140 years old.
Mm.
But I think now we're in a new energy revolution. So we went from hay to coal to petrol and diesel.
Uh-huh.
Now we're going to electricity and locally distributed, generated electricity.
Uh-huh.
And that's a fundamental change in energy worldwide. And I can't even predict what the impact is. I think we are at one of those moments like when the internet became a big thing. And cell phones were launched, you couldn't predict the long-term impact. And I think it's going to be astounding. I think we're going to look back in 30 years' time and say it was one of those fundamental tipping points.
Yube, it's always a pleasure conversing with you. And thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. Always a pleasure.
That is Yube Roo. He is co-founder and director at Charge. And this is Tech Central Show.